I'm recording this for posterity, and it will go in the archive, so I've asked all the panelists to sign interview agreements as part of our legal requirements at the College of Charleston. I think I probably know everybody here, maybe a couple people are new to me, but I'm Dale Rosengarten. I'm the curator and historian in special collections at the College of Charleston Library, and my particular area of concentration is the Jewish Heritage Collection. Over 18 years, we've built a world-class archives, thanks to all of y'all. Because, you know, all the best pictures in the newsletter were Sandra Garfinkel Shapiro's, and Gail contributed some wonderful ones as well. This meeting is very interesting to me from an archival point of view, because people are coming up with albums and pictures that I didn't know existed. And I do think, as Marcy said, it's a subject that's sort of begging for a historian. And if we build the archives, they will come, and they will write the dissertation or the article. So we have a wonderful group of former campers and camp directors here. What I've asked everybody to do, maybe starting with Rabbi Sherman, is to just speak for 5 minutes about their experience of summer camp. Right in the middle, you've got the Popkins, who are going to talk about it from a director point of view. And then Marcy and I have a list of questions. We'll see how much time we have to ask, what people have or haven't covered, and then throw it open to more comments and questions from the audience. One thing I would say, I can't believe that not a single cell phone rang the entire one of duration of Marcy's talk. And of course, we forgot to tell you to shut them off. So I know they're all shut off anyway, but that was great. When we do go into Q&A, when you ask a question, if you'll say who you are, loud and clear, because if we ever transcribe the recording, which we do, you'll be identified, and not just, you know, Q, but with your name. Not unless you insist, Jeffrey. But somebody may burst into song. You never know.
A real camp song.
So, again, Rabbi, since you chose that seat at the end, you're it first.
Good afternoon. Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
And welcome to Columbia, everyone. We're glad to have you here. Thank you for the invitation to participate. I have the honor and privilege of being the rabbi of the Tree of Life congregation here in Columbia. And I was thinking about on my way here, I am in my fifth decade of Jewish camping. As I began as a child, I grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And I grew up going to our Reform Regional Camp, which is a sister camp of Camp Coleman, the Green Family Camp. So I went there as a camper for many years. And then I spent 6 years on staff at the Green Family Camp, as well as a summer at the California Camp of the Union for Reform Judaism. And I've spent, I believe now it's 10 out of the last 14 summers, I've spent a week or two at Camp Coleman as a faculty member. So I've been privileged to have a few different camp experiences. Growing up in Tulsa, Oklahoma is similar to growing up in Columbia, South Carolina. When I went to camp for the first time, I had never seen 400 Jewish kids in one place at one time before. To be in an environment where everyone around me knew what Shabbat was, knew what a synagogue was, that was a brand new experience for me. And I flourished and I loved camp. It was a chance to interact with, again, Jewish friends my age who were going through similar experiences. The camp that I went to served Oklahoma and Texas. It was great to be outside. It was a little hot in the middle of Texas in June and July. We had many days where it was over 100 degrees in the shade. But thankfully, the Green Family Camp was mostly air-conditioned at that point. For me, camp, I learned lots of Hebrew at camp. The camp didn't have a dining hall. It only had a chadar ocha. We learned the Jewish names of the Hebrew names for lots of buildings and places, the music that I learned, the prayers that I learned. The reason I play the guitar today is because of my summer camp experiences. And I still play some of the songs that I once sang as a camper, both in our services and with our kids. My perspective now, we've really tried at Tree of Life to get as many of our kids to camp as possible. Again, I think it's a wonderful and a necessary experience for kids coming from here. Again, to be in that environment where they're living on a Jewish calendar, where everything stops for Shabbat. To see the camp at Holman these days, to see everyone dressed in white as a Friday evening, singing Maya Fehayom, singing songs as we work our way to the Chadar Ochel for a Shabbat chicken dinner, followed by services, followed by song session. It's a very special experience for the kids. They understand that Shabbat is different from the rest of the week. It truly is a day of rest, a break, which they don't get to experience enough here. So I'm a big advocate for camp. I always have been, I always will be. It helped to make me the Jew that I am. It helped make me the rabbi that I am. And I hope to share those experiences with as many of our kids from our congregation and from this region. Camp Coleman is a fascinating place these days in that you have a wide mixture of kids from different Jewish backgrounds. You have Jews from Southeast Florida, so you have the Miami and Boca and Fort Lauderdale kids, and you have a lot of Atlanta kids. But then you also have the Charleston and the Greenville and the Columbia kids and Charlotte kids. You have kids from very small Jewish communities. Everyone finds their place there at Coleman, and I think Coleman's doing a wonderful job. I'm happy to be serving on their clergy advisory board and to be serving, to be a part of their faculty each and every summer. And I'll be happy to answer more questions about my own experiences and things happening at Camp Coleman these days. So I'll stop there. We have a lot of folks here.
Dr. Robert Steinberg.
Hi, I'm Robert Steinberg. I was born and raised in Charleston. And I guess I was a camper at Camp Judea from 61 to 65, or 66, somewhere in there. Memory is not as strong as it used to be. Prior to that, I was at Camp Ramah in the Poconos for 1 year, which was not a particularly good experience for me, but a different one. And then prior to that, I actually went to, as I recall, Camp Juniper, which was the JCC summer camp for the Charleston JCC for 2 summers in Sherrill, South Carolina. But after those experiences, I found my home at Camp Judea, was there for those 4 years, and then went to the National Young Judea Camps for 3 years, and then came back and was on staff at Camp Judea again as a counselor for 1 year, and then maintenance for 2 years after that. So then somewhat of a hiatus from camping as life went on, and then over the last 10 to 12 years or so, I've served on Camp Judea's board of directors, and now I'm on their property board, which is a slightly different entity. So I've kind of stayed in touch with camp. Camp for me was an opportunity to get away from home for the summers, and I'm sure it was a mutual feeling on my parents' part, that a good opportunity for me to get out and meet other Jewish kids my age from not only South Carolina and Charleston, but the entire Southeast and as far away as Puerto Rico, actually. It was a wonderful experience. I went to a private school, so there were very few Jewish kids in my class. And even though I grew up in a strong Jewish community, I didn't have strong bonds within the city of kids my age. A few BB AZA affairs and things like that. But summers for me was an opportunity to spend, a solid month with kids my age in a Jewish and a Zionist environment. Camp Judea had a strong Zionist program on top of being, for me, very religious with services every day, and of course on Shabbos and kosher. And so it was a wonderful opportunity. For not only for the camaraderie, but to do things that typically I wouldn't do, like horseback riding or camping or canoe trips. Back then, we didn't have trips to Washington and New York, and of course, there was no electronics, so it was not a big competition for connectivity, if you will, but it was just great to be able to do stuff that you just didn't do during the year or with friends that you didn't see for the rest of the year. So that was pretty much my camping experience, and then I've, like I said, I've stayed in touch with the camp through their boards, and have had an opportunity to watch them grow and massage programmings to be relevant and current, yet still attract kids for its strong Jewish and Zionist content. You know, they learn about Israel, they learn about life cycle events in Judaism. So it's a very strong program that tries to be a little oasis in the middle of a normal hectic electronic and academic and athletic year. So it's kind of a way to get away.
Great. Brett Serban.
Hello, my name is Brett Serban. I grew up in Columbia. I'm not born here. I was born in Hershey, Pennsylvania. I guess I got my camping, Jewish camping origins at the JCC here in town at Camp Chavarim, which is just pretty much day camp. But it kind of inspired me, I think, probably to want to go to overnight camps, and probably my parents were happy to oblige at the time. And I remember I went from 84 to 87, I think, so 2 years, being 2 years in Kesher, which was 11, 12. And I remember going, I think, first session 1 year, and then second session the second year, and what I realized is that the different sessions at Camp Judea have different flavors. So first session was the Puerto Rican kids, like the Behars, tons of Behars, like 15 of them. And then Miami, there are kids from Miami and Knoxville also. And then second session was kids from North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I don't know if you know the Schumanns, the Nelsons, all that. But so it was different. And what I realized is that one session alone wasn't going to cut it for me. So for the last 2 years I was there, I went both sessions. So I had 2 months of summer camp. You know, the memories I have from Camp Judea mostly is, like he said, getting into Hebrew a little bit. And there's nothing that I really retain from that. But, you know, little things like shira, meaning to sing it, or, you know, rikut is dancing. And those are, like, things that we did. And we did have an Ivri class, but everyone was joking around in English the whole time. So, but, yeah, it was very, like he said about Judea, it was very Zionist-oriented. It was my first experiences with kashrut, with praying every day, because we had to do shavuot every morning. You know, singing the prayers, Birchat Hamazon, after every meal. They had Israeli scouts who taught me skills that I used even when I did an army program in Israel years later. As they taught me to climb the rope, I was like, I know this. I knew it from being 8 years old in Camp Judea. You know, the things that they had there, you know, I'd gone to another camp previously, and they had, it was a different flavor. But Judea brought cultural things that, not necessarily that I was missing, but I hadn't been exposed to on such a grand level. Like you said, when you grow up in Columbia, there's 15 Jewish kids in your Hebrew school class, and they're all spread out otherwise between Spring Valley, R&E, Flora, Dreer, Irmo, Heathwood, Cardinal Newman, wherever they're going to school. So never more than eight in one place. That was my experience. I went to Spring Valley, and we had probably eight kids in my class that were Jewish. So to see 400 kids at the same time, all Jewish, it was very interesting, and probably led me to my college choice, which was Brandeis, which, you know, it's all Jewish kids. And I had some choices as well, you know, between schools at the same level of education, but I think I was like, you know, I felt an affinity for Brandeis, probably because of my experiences at Camp Judea. You know, I still remember very various things, you know, just memories here and there. Bikurim was a big inter-camp. They divided the camp into four teams, and yeah, and the colors. Yeah, the color war. And the four teams competed in a series of random and silly games to win. We ended up playing, I guess, every year. We also had a competition against Camp Blue Star. I remember being victorious in some of those.
But I like in memory.
Yes, three or four, but. You know, other things I remember, like, I remember my horse's name was Egozi. You know, I got a junior lifeguard card there, which was, at the time, I guess, an amazing feat, because I had to swim for like an hour straight, which would, I would be in traction now. And then, you know, various things. We went to Dollywood, we went to Ghost Town in the Sky, and, you know, just the friendships that I made. And I still talk to the Schumanns, those kids, you know. some of the kids I talked to, you know, not often, but that's where we became friends, and they're lifelong friends. If they're ever in town, they reach out. When we played UNC this year, and a lot of them went to UNC, we were talking smack to each other. I talked to him in like 10 years. I'm like, what's up, boys? I was like, what's going on? You going down? So little things like that. You know, it was a great experience for me. Like I said, probably influenced a lot of things about my Jewish memory as a child and my Jewish identity moving forward. And, you know, I would certainly suggest that everyone go to a Jewish camp. If you are Jewish and are so inclined, then your parents will let you go. I had a lot of good memories coming from there and going there. So,
was Walter your parent?
I don't even remember. Yeah, maybe. Maybe. I don't know. I wish I did. I don't even remember what counts was. I know they were cool.
Were any of your campmates at Brandeis?
Yes. One Dory Black from Savannah. Oh. Yeah, and I saw her like the first day. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then there was people that were there that I've met, you know, through business. You know, Jonathan Zucker was a guy that was really my little brother's age, but you know, Todd knew him, and Scott went to Georgia Tech with him. But then I saw him, like, didn't you go to Camp Judea? And that's why I recognized him.
Mm-hmm. So next we have Roger and Candy Popkin, and you guys can do any, do a duet, do a single, whatever you want.
Why don't we just function like independent people?
That's good.
And we can pretend, anyway. I was born in 1950, which was the first year that Blue Star was in North Carolina. They had rented a facility in North Georgia for 2 years, 48 and 49, that was for boys only. But from 1950 until this 10 minutes, I've basically been at Blue Star all my life. So I'm probably not a great, a tremendously objective reporter in terms of what camp life means and on what different levels. I was at one point the president of the American Camp Association, which is the professional organization of camps. There are 5,500 members. And it's one of the things that I have discovered about camp as an entity, regardless of its orientation, whether it's boys, girls, Jewish, non-Jewish, is that it has an enormous growth potential in terms of impacting on the development of a child. And in terms of the Jewish camp community these days, there aren't going to be a whole lot of camps like the one that you went to. What I would call the observancy wars, the competition between different movement groups in proving that they are the most Jewish of all of the elements of Jewish camps, has to some extent corrupted the sort of naive, gentle way of being able to bring values into the lives of children without having them be labeled, without having them be specifically a Jewish observance, whether it's a beer cart or services on Friday night. So it's a different world than the one that you came up in or the one that I came into. I call them the observancy wars because the implication of that is that it isn't entirely positive. And I don't want anyone to think that I meant it any other way, because I don't think it's positive. What I would say is that if you talk to anyone in organized camping, they will be able to tell you the degree to which living in a cabin with strangers, creating out of that cabin a family, creating an understanding of how the world operates, how the world is going to operate, how you as a person can impact on that world. That happens to anyone in a professionally run, well-organized summer camp. I think as Jewish people, we feel we have 5,000 years worth of combination of historical traditions and genetic engineering of good things to pass along to our youth that would make them continue to be Jews by choice. I'm not sure that you get to be a Jew by choice if you go to a camp that's particularly interested in the observances rather than the values, but that's a different argument for another day. What I would say is, going to a camp like the one you went to, which doesn't really exist anymore, that kind of camp, and a camp like Blue Star, which was voluntarily Jewish. And one of the things that my father and my uncles were very insistent on was that Blue Star be available and open to any portion of the Jewish community, whether they were conservative, Reform, Orthodox even, or just Jewish, or maybe not even entirely Jewish. And so most of the character of Blue Star was predicated on being able to bring those values into the lives of children who would then be able to take them on into their lives. Interestingly enough, Blue Star is and continues to be primarily a Jewish camp. We do our services, we are kosher, we do all the things that on a superficial level would make us a Jewish camp. But it's a voluntary experience, and it is crafted almost entirely on an annual basis as to the level of what kind of importance we're going to put on various things. Candy and I are wearing these, wearing these bracelets, because in the last 10 years we've come across the idea of doing something that indicates what our values are for that particular summer. This last summer it was finding magic, do good, and live humbly. Very similar to what your guy. And we didn't copy off his paper. We didn't even know he existed. So what I would say is that being a camper at Blue Star was a special kind of place. In the South of the 40s, 50s, and 60s, it was the only place Jewish kids could go to camp. And that's why it was such an open and creative kind of environment. There's a lot of places that kids can go to Jewish camp in the South now, but there still is only one Blue Star.
Hi, I'm Candy Popkin, and I was born and raised in Port Chester, New York. So I had never heard of Blue Star until I met Roger back in, what was it, 1970? Yeah. So I grew up in New York where everybody was Jewish, and it was okay to be just Jewish. So there wasn't a lot of observance in our household, but I knew I was Jewish, and I knew I was going to marry a nice Jewish boy.
Got that wrong.
Where did you guys meet, Katie?
We went to Boston University, and that's where we met our sophomore year. Yeah. So, and so my first experience at camp was being married in the chapel on June 5th, 1971. Okay, she can't hear me. Where we were married, and the next day I went to work because I was finding out what camp is like, and when it's summer, you work. So you work a few days during the rest of the year, though, but mostly in the summer it's like 24/7. So Blue Star was my first sort of Jewish immersion experience. So I went to chapel. I went to the Elmore Solomon Chapel, and I like heard all these wonderful prayers. I'm fairly familiar with, but I had never heard them sung in one voice and beautifully, and led by kids. And there was just something about that that sparked something in me that really made me want to be Jewish. And you know, because New York is New York. Everybody's sort of Jewish, you know. And so it was exciting for me to find out. First of all, I didn't even know there were Jews in the South. And second of all, I didn't know that Jewish camp could be like such a wonderful place. I'd never heard of that. So, I mean, that was really my introduction to being not observant, but emotionally Jewish. And, you know, we went on to you know, we got married in the chapel at camp, and we went on to have kids who are grown-ups now. We have a grandchild. But, and I think a lot of the values that we brought them up with were the values that we learned at camp, because camp meant that you cared about other people, and you cared about social justice, and you cared about, you know, what your government was doing, and, you know, you just wanted the broader world to understand what these things were, and why couldn't people understand? Everybody should go to camp. But that was my first introduction to camp.
What years were y'all directors of camp?
72 to 2010, 11.
11. So we're just, wow. We're retired
just
camp directors.
Yes.
But so last summer was our 43rd summer together. And we're proud to say our daughter and her husband are now the current owners and directors of Blue Star. And I just, the other thing I think I just wanted to bring up about my experience at camp is that I always knew a lot of Gentile people. And because it was New York, they sort of had an idea about, you know, what Judaism was, what Jewish people believed. But when I got to camp, and we always had a lot of Gentile staff also. I mean, in the early days, it was more the specialists and the kitchen staff. And where was I going with this?
Counselors.
And the counselors. So I would see these people who would come in not knowing anything about Judaism. Sometimes they really, in an interview, had said they'd never met a Jewish person before we hired them. And so I would see them come into camp and share our values and learn the blessings and the prayers and, you know, and basically get an education about what Jewish people were about and what we believed. And I think we've made a lot of friends for Judaism over the years, is the point I'm trying to make. We've always been like very inclusive and willing to hear other people's, you know, versions of the truth. And I don't know, that's one of the things I'm proud about of camp. And I'm proud of like all the kids that have gone through camp, and they remember their times at Blue Star. They remember Uncle Herman and Uncle Harry. And I don't know, it's just the keystone of our lives, evidently, so. And it just makes me very happy. Sorry.
You okay?
We brought Kleenex because we're going to cry.
Try to get through this. I'm Maxine Solomon McLarnon. I'm originally from Augusta, but my daddy was from Charleston, and the majority of my family lives in Charleston. All the Solomons, Deporex, Robinsons, all family. Before I say anything else, I want to think about and recognize Ben, Harry, and Herman Popkin, and all of the Popkin family who've worked so hard and tirelessly to give what they've given to all the children and generations of children who've been to camp. The two biggest things that I think I've taken from camp after really thinking about it are the friendships I made there. Most of my friends today are the ones I met at Blue Star. People have friends from college they're close to and high school, but it's my Blue Star friends, and we still stay in touch and have lots of reunions, you know. The other thing is my religion. Being from Augusta, it was a rather small Jewish population there, and we didn't really go into religion the way I needed it to be. But at Blue Star, I learned that what Judaism is and how to live a Jewish life. I gained my Jewish identity there, and later in life when I needed strength to go through certain discrimination situations, I would call on the Jewish identity and strength I'd gotten from Blue Star and could handle it just fine. my situation overall is a little bit different because I wasn't the only one in my family who went to camp. My brother Robert, sister Nancy, and my mama and daddy were all there. We'd all pack up. Harry and Herman and mama and daddy had been friends since the 30s. And Uncle Harry kept saying, come to Blue Star, come. And we finally went. And we're there between 8 and 15 years, depending on which one of us. So we'd all pack up and go, and it was really a wonderful family experience. It was so nice to have the Popkin family and our family and then all these new wonderful friends. We were there, like I said, all those years. And we, at one time, I counted, we had 12 first cousins there all at the same time. And it was nice, except if you'd have a cup of coffee, you'd see Cousin Harold saying, you're too young to drink coffee. Put that down. You know, they were all watching out for us. So there's a part of this that I'm afraid I'm going to have to read because I get a little emotional. If it weren't for Blue Star and friends there, I don't know how we would have made it through the death of my father. He died at a very young age. He was just 42. In the meantime, Mama was in charge of senior girls all those years, and Daddy would just be there and volunteer to help in transportation, taking kids into to the doctor to get. We used to get an ice cream soda if we could swim a whale. But so we were there all that time, and then Daddy died at the young age of 42, very unexpectedly. And during those years, I've got to read it. In February 61, Daddy unexpectedly passed away. He was only 42. I felt that I couldn't go back to camp because it was such a family experience for me. I couldn't go without him. During that year, it seems like I did see a lot of Uncle Harry and Uncle Herman. They wrote inspirational letters to us and talked to us on the phone, and we had many comforting conversations. I still, to this day, don't know how they got all the condolence letters and cards together. But they had them all bound up in two huge, beautiful blue volumes and presented it to us. I couldn't look at them right away, but several years later, and now, it just brings me a lot of comfort. And soon we'll be sharing that with Daddy's great-grandson, who's here now. So those books meant so much. It took a while, but we finally read them. The Popkins then talked with Mama about the honor of dedicating the new chapel in Daddy's memory. And I just said, the Solomon Chapel, can you imagine? Never in a million years can we ever express the gratitude that we feel. After that, it was never hard to return to camp because Daddy was there. As I remember, the rain hitting the tin roofs and the wonderful storms and the rustling of the wind through the trees and the sound of the dining hall door slamming. I don't know, it's that guy, that same slam. Don't ever change it. Okay. And George Stern leading us in songs and Alan Cohen with his bullwhip and Sermon on the Mount, which got us all in a lot of trouble. I said, I think my mind lives at Blue Star, and I know my heart does. I'm still so connected. Give me a job. I want to be a counselor. But I think I've covered all the main bases here. If anybody has questions.
I opened the book to the page with your father and mother and the chapel.
Thank you.
And I'm going to jump in just for a second and mention, because it does play into the value side of this. We still introduce the Elmore Solomon Chapel every summer in what's generally referred to as the Elmore Talk.
Elmo Talk.
Yeah.
Elmo.
Well, Elmo. But the premise is that the chapel was named after Elmore because he was an ordinary righteous man. He wasn't a rabbi, no offense. He wasn't a politician. He wasn't a leader. He wasn't famous. He wasn't rich. He wasn't a movie star. He didn't win an Oscar. He was what any camper who's going to be in that chapel can aspire to be, which is a decent, righteous human being. And so even though the gift might have been 1960 when the chapel was, or 61 when it was dedicated,
the gift keeps giving to the camp because it provides a wonderful allegory to what a child seeking to become a person might be able to aspire to. And I didn't want to let that go unsaid. I don't let much go unsaid, but go unsaid either.
Yeah, where did y'all live during the year? Where was home?
Augusta.
Dale Siegel Messerman.
Ooh. Oh, right. I brought Kleenex just in case. Before I go any further, Roger, your father and Harry were the leaders of the camp, the first people I met when I drove down that road. But the heart of Blue Star, for me, was Elsie and Elmore Solomon. They were ever-present, wonderful people, and wise. And I always thought, I can't wait to see Elsie and Elmore, even more than you, and I loved you. But your parents were just the heart of the camp. So it was,
thank you.
I didn't cry. Anyway, I remember Roger as a toddler. I think my first year at camp was in 1952. And I come from Walterboro, South Carolina, and I really didn't know Jewish. I was the only Jewish girl. And really, I'm trying to remember, I was maybe 8 years old. It seemed to me that one of the motivating forces for going to camp in the summer was to escape polio. I know that sounds crazy, but I remember this fear that summer brought polio to Southern people because
that was Jewish polio.
It was Jewish polio, but I was escaping to Jewish polio. Anyway, but I do remember that being a real fear of Southern parents. My most vivid memory of walking into the pioneer cabin after getting my bunk and making sure it was on the top and saying goodbye to my mother and my grandfather was, for some reason, someone asked me if I was Jewish. And I said, yes, I didn't know that much. And then all of a sudden, she said, well, I am too. And I remember going to every single girl saying, are you Jewish? And she said, yes. And I said, are you Jewish? And 12 Jewish girls in that cabin. I couldn't believe it. I wasn't, because I came from a town, there was no temple. I went to church on Sundays with my friends until a mother of the other Jewish boy said, these kids have got to have some Sunday school. So we went to his house. But I was astounded at that. And I really didn't know what it meant, although I had a sense of what it meant to be Jewish. I think that I was probably emotionally Jewish before I was religiously Jewish. So for me, the magic was sort of celebrating Jewishness. I mean, it just blew my mind. I can remember having services on Friday night, and it was just the most magically happy feeling. And it was that feeling of getting dressed up and then knowing that on Saturday, that was a day we were going to do very special things. We were going to celebrate Shabbos. We were going to do very relaxing things. And then saying goodbye on Saturday night. And Sam, I mean, going down to the lake for Havdalah with candles it was so rewarding. And of course, the best thing was then we could meet with the boys for the dance. But the other thing about camp for me was I had this enormous feeling of privilege. And I can remember one year the store was doing very badly and business was bad. And Daddy was always complaining about how he was going to make the next paycheck. And I can remember going to him, and I was probably 10 by this point, and saying, you know, Daddy, I know camp is expensive, and I don't have to go this year. And I said it. It was such a sacrifice to say it. But I truly meant it. I wouldn't go to Blue Star, which I looked forward to all year. And he looked at me, and he said, Gail, I'll borrow the money. before you don't have, before you can't go to Blue Star. And I remember feeling so grateful to him that I wasn't going to have to skip a year. But probably, I wrote some notes. I think that other than the sacrifice, I can remember all of a sudden feeling that I was part of something bigger than me. And I can remember coming home and trying to explain to my non-Jewish friends, all of whom were non-Jewish, you know, that I'd gone to a Jewish friend. And I can remember one friend saying, but you're dating Quentin Foster, who was, and she said, I always hoped that you could marry Quentin Foster, then you could go to the Episcopal Church. She says, wouldn't you rather be an Episcopal? Because we're all Episcopal, and they all...
They get to kneel, too.
Yeah. And I can remember saying, you know, I like Quentin, but I really like being Jewish. And she was astounded at that, because they had no sense of what it meant to be Jewish. But I did now, because I went to Blue Star. And I think it's funny, I titled my little thing, The Magical Camp Blue Star. It was magic. And I remember, at the end I said, listen, I learned where I came from, and I'll never forget, ever, who I am, where I came from, and this sense of being Jewish. One more thing. We have a dear friend who's Irish. He now lives in London, and he visits Kiowa several times a year. And he was sitting at our home last week for dinner, and I said, I won't be here next weekend. And he said, why? And I said, well, because I'm going to be on this panel about the experiences of being at a Jewish camp in the summer as a child. And I said, would you like to read what I wrote? And he said, sure. So I let him read what I wrote. And he said, I have to tell you, I could have written it. He said, I grew up in Ireland, and my parents sent me to a Christian camp from the time I was 8 years old. And he said, it is to this day the most meaningful event that happened in my childhood. And he said, I could have written your piece, but mine would have been on Camp St. Francis. And he said, I think I learned what it really means to be a moral Christian, to do good for others. And I said, you know, I think I learned from Blue Star what the morality of being Jewish really is. It's caring for your fellow man, for doing good, and for living a good life.
Before we go on, I want to tell y'all something about Gail. She seems so sweet, but we go back a long way, and I will never forget this. We were in Savannah at my cousin Harold Solomon's bar mitzvah, and I couldn't wait to go. He was a little older, and I knew he was going to dance with me at the bar mitzvah party, and he met Gail that night. And they never stopped dancing. Not once did he dance with me. And he was just with her all the whole night. And we talk about it to this day every time the family gets together. It's so funny. Well, Colin.
I was a real hussy, right?
It's just awesome.
Lisa Collis. Cohen.
Hello. I want to thank Rachel for putting out the all call for the article, and for Dale and Rachel for accepting my article, and Marcy for giving me the feedback on it. I will try to put a diagonal on this very quickly because it's taken a little while to go through the panel. I was born and raised in Kingstree, South Carolina. My parents were both from Charleston, and I was raised in a kosher, observant, conservative Jewish home. And when I say that, I was not allowed to color or write with crayons on Shabbat till I went to Camp Blue Star. I was sent to Charleston to live with my spinster aunt and attend Camp Baker in 1966 when I was quite young. I cried all the time, like I stated in my article, and my aunt got really sick of it, and she called my parents, and they came to pick me up. That was the end of Camp Baker for me. Then the next year, they decided they would send me to Camp Blue Star for 2 weeks. How my mother knew about Camp Blue Star, I think, was because her family used to go to one of those retreats and take time away from the heat of Charleston in the summertime. And I think the Popkin brothers were quite good at marketing, and that's why a lot of kids from the South Carolina Lowcountry ended up at Camp Blue Star. They developed relationships with the families down there. And I'll end my little talk with an anecdote about that. So I went to two-week camp, and I was homesick, and Paula Grossman was my counselor. She was a great counselor. I still remember her 47 years later. Every afternoon during quiet time when you get especially homesick, she would let me sit on her lap, and she was just great. But my parents were resolute that I would attend Jewish camp, and so the next year they sent me to Blue Star for a month. And Paula was my counselor again, and I was in Pioneer Girls, and I got sick near the end of camp, and it was around my birthday, and I was in the infirmary, and I remember Hilda Nay took great care of me, and her daughter Terry was one of my friends, and there was also a young black lady in my cabin, and I think her mother worked in the kitchen.
Joni Crawford.
Yeah, and she was one of my friends, too. That was the year, too, if any of you read my article, that I rode the bus from Charleston, and my mother overdressed me a little bit for the trip. I wore a dress and fishnet stockings and patent leather shoes, and it was quite embarrassing and very traumatic and still haunts me to this day. I never bought fishnet tights when they were in fashion a few years ago. Madonna and Lady Gaga can buy all the ones that I'm not going to take off the shelves. Growing up in King Street, we actually had a conservative synagogue. It is now a Catholic church. We actually had a very active Jewish community. We had services every Friday night. They were led by a little Lithuanian man who spoke Hebrew, and he would race through the Hebrew part, and then all the men in the congregation would take turns leading the English readings. Once a month, the conservative rabbi from Charleston would come up on a Sunday. We would have bar mitzvahs on a Sunday. We would have a covered dish supper. I never knew there were bar mitzvahs on Saturdays till I was much older. Kicking and screaming, I went to Sumter TYG as a teenager. All of us would go. I didn't want to go. I was very happy living my small town existence with my non-Jewish friends. They were very accepting of me. I could go to Bible camp with them in the summer, and my mother said, "You can do everything they do. Don't make a cross. Ask for extra popsicle sticks to make a Jewish star. Don't take communion, and you can sing all the songs, but you have to hum Jesus." I can do this. And I did it until I got to youth group, and I fell in love with TYG. I drank the Kool-Aid from the get-go and was at Sefty Leadership Camp, first at Barney Meddins while they were renovating Camp Coleman, and then two summers at Camp Coleman. And I will tell you that camping experience galvanized my Judaism for me. The guys were cute, too. That didn't help. But, I made lifelong friends. And I had a great college roommate that I was in TYG with. I went to Israel with another friend on a leadership mission from the Atlanta Federation, a young leadership mission, where I met my husband. We had two kids. We enrolled them in Jewish day school. I decided that I would become an adult bat mitzvah at age 44, because why would I expect my children to do something that I had never done? So at age 44, two of my friends and I became adult bat mitzvah together. We fell in love with the Argentinian rabbi that bat mitzvahed us, and so then we all left that synagogue and started a new synagogue with our Argentinian and Chilean rabbis. They're a husband and wife couple, so we did that at age 45. Now I'm 55. I've sent my kids to Jewish day school, non-Jewish and Jewish camps, and Jewish camps. My son went to Camp Nebagaman in Lake Nebagaman, Wisconsin, which is very similar to the camping experience Marcy had, only it's owned by a Jewish family. And it's been a great ride for us. My kids all feel very connected. But camp truly galvanized my Judaism for me. I don't keep kosher, though, I will say that. But we do observe all the holidays, and we enjoy celebrations, and we enjoy the fact. My husband actually went to Blue Star, too. He was not a great camper either. Neither one of us is very athletic, and I think that was something that one reason we might not have liked it as much as we should have. I will close with a story. I was at the eye doctor a couple of years ago, and it was before the HIPAA regulations got so tough, and you would sign in on the sheet. And above, the name that was signed in before mine was Harry Popkin. And in the waiting room was an elderly gentleman and his wife with a very familiar twinkle in his eye. And I went over to him and I said, "Mr. Popkin," and his wife said, I said, "I'm Lisa Collis Cohen." And his wife said, "Well, he may not remember you." He goes, "I remember you. You're from Kingstree, South Carolina." I mean, that was like 45 years after I'd been to Kingstree. So
it was
incredible. And so while I went to camp very young and may not have had the most positive experience, I think it really enabled me later on to go to camp and have a really positive experience and to bring some of those qualities that I learned at camp into my life today. And I'm still friendly with a lot of the kids I knew in TYG. And at Blue Star, my prom date was a Blue Star camper when I was there. That's really kind of funny. And I did give my yearbook to Dale for the collection, so they do have it from 1967. Diana.
You know, we really do have plenty of time for Q&A. So, Marcy, from our list of questions, is there anything you want?
I kind of like to open it up.
Okay, let's open it up.
I know Roger was writing lots of notes, too. If folks have just, you know, reactions to some of what other people were saying, I'd love to hear that.
Let's do it that way, and we can throw in a question, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, anybody who missed giving Marcy... asking Marcy a question, like Ted, who's leaving. Did you want to ask Marcy something about her talk?
I had a question actually with an earlier talk.
Okay, we'll do it later.
But I'll say that.
Okay.
Great.
So, questions or comments or experiences?
Similar.
I know the Sandras have experiences.
Well, I went to tell you who to. That was up in New England.
But you were at Blue Star for the convention.
I was a young Judy and we'd go to the convention. Sandra and I would go to the conventions.
Dale, I've got one question, and it kind of was raised by something that Candy said, which is really powerful, which was about the importance of social justice, which I think is really, I know that just that idea and that concept and those values, how was that expressed at Blue Star in conscious ways? And also, I think about all the kids that were, especially largely the generation here, who were at Southern camps during the height of kind of the Jim Crow South, before the Civil Rights Act, and before, you know, right as the kind of the South is exploding during the Civil Rights Movement. How was that impacting that kind of bubble and that world there at camp? And how were y'all thinking about
that? Kind of, you know, hazy on some of the dates because some of the stuff was really there. But I know that in the 60s, when integration was like a huge thing, Roger's dad and his Uncle Harry founded something called Camping Unlimited.
Camping Unlimited?
Yes.
Yep.
And it was for Jewish kids and black kids and Indian kids. And they ran a camp where they just brought all these kids together, and they said, "He's got the same blood you have. You know, he's a person. You're a person. You have different beliefs, but I love when Herman always used to say that Judaism is the mother of all religions." So he said, "So we all have all this in common."
Right.
So I remember that, and I just, I was, you know, born in New York, and I was coming to the South. That was a joy to hear. I was a little nervous.
Right.
I think prior even to the Camping Unlimited program was really stimulated by the assassination of Martin Luther King. But before that, they, and I'm sure some of the people in the room who are older than me and were at Blue Star probably remember Brotherhood services that they would do every summer. And the premise of the Brotherhood service was that same idea. And it was challenging, and maybe you could say equally challenging, for Jews in the South to take a stand on racial justice because it was in the South, and it put themselves at risk to some extent. there are lots of stories of different kinds of issues where, you know, the various elements in the Jewish communities either promoted or shied away from that. I think that Blusov was very diverse when it came to progressive social justice issues, including the war in Vietnam. You know, the part of the reason, and I think Candy hit on the fact that humanistic Gentiles who found themselves at Blusov or were somehow wound up working at camp because it was harder for us to get campers who weren't Jewish, were usually attracted to the elements in Judaism that they didn't recognize as being humanistic from their own points of view, but they really were part of what our legacy is. Part of the reason I think being a voluntary Jewish person in the way that you live your life, which can be stimulated by an experience at a camp like Blue Star, even though there aren't very many of us anymore, is very important because it does teach by life experience what it means to be a person, what it takes to be a courageous person in the face of lots of different kinds of issues. I can remember a summer where we had a gay couple, a nurse and a mailman, but they were both men. This is maybe mid-80s, early 90s. And it really never dawned on us that, you know, that would be a problem for some people. It was a problem for some people. Camp doesn't give you the luxury of picking and choosing how you want to be just and how you want to be in terms of significantly behaving in a righteous way. And so, to me, the voluntary nature of our Jewish programming was always with the goal in mind of helping children build a person who can live in the world successfully and righteously. And part of that starts with the Elmore Solomon piece about the chapel, what kind of person it takes to make a real human being, not just a person. Sorry. That's more than 5 minutes.
I was asked a question what the Camp Judeans thought about the Camp Blue Star folks when we came to do our competition. And, you know, I answered that there was zero animosity. Like, I remember we were all stunned that there was another camp of almost entirely Jewish people in Henderson. We were like, where are the Jewish people coming from? Amazing. But there was, we didn't, I mean, it wasn't, you know, like, oh, we hate those guys, we're going to stomp them. I mean, you know, really, I loved it. Like, every time, all my experiences with the Blue Star kids were like, they're just as nice as we are. Like, why don't we do this, like, more often? We should do this twice, you know, we should do this. But yeah, it was, you know, it was a fair question because, you know, a lot of times us and them, it wouldn't even like that. I think there's really a good sense of us and us, like, and that's probably a good thing. A credit to you guys and probably whoever was running
my
today.
My father was a founder of Camp Judea, because he worked for Hadassah, which ran the Judean movement. But the local truck drivers used to define the difference between Judea and Blue Star as you guys were the upper Jew camp, we were the lower
camp. on the other side of the world.
If I might say to that, I was chairman of Camp Judea for quite a few years, and the Popkins were just wonderful to us. Camp Judea, Herman was the first director, and he's on his name. There's four people who signed the papers, and Herman's name is on those papers of ownership of the camp in Hendersonville. And then he ceded it over. But he always sat on our board, and he was always extremely helpful, far-seeing, and never was like, this is our camp and this is your camp. We were all Jewish camps. And it was really a beautiful way to learn how to work with people and care about people. And I learned so much from your father. and I just admired him so much. And if there, ever there was a problem, that's who I called. He got us our attorney. He got us, he did everything. And that's who I called. And one other thing, and this is just from my perspective, I work with Camp Judea. To me, it doesn't matter what camp any child goes to, just that they go to a Jewish camp so they can get this kesher with each other, this connectiveness.
So let me mention, since it's been discussed a little bit about the social justice agenda, and that's the set camp at Coleman. I went to Blue Star, had wonderful experiences as a kid, but as a teenager, I went from 68 to 70 to Camp Coleman, and it was very focused on social justice. That was a major mission of that experience. I remember one year they had a fellow up there giving advice how you could apply to be a conscientious objector. I didn't know there was such a thing. You know, they were giving these Jewish, 17-year-olds how they could apply to the draft. I mean, I've never heard of such a thing.
Was that at Coleman or
at Coleman? It was a transformative experience for these kids from these southern towns who, we eagerly discuss issues of war and peace and civil rights and all this. This was very much the centerpiece of the Coleman experience, and it was a pretty special thing. And I think it and also, people read books, they debated great issues. It made it kind of cool to be smart, it was a really wonderful experience. I don't want to take anything to Blue Star because I also had wonderful experiences at Blue Star, but. You know, when you're 16, 17, 15 years old, those are pretty impressive experiences to me.
And by that, that's still happening. Meaning, when we plan the curricula at Coleman for the summer, when we plan the sessions at Coleman, the older kids go on social action trips each summer. So that this past year, we were asked to bring, every camper was asked to bring extra toiletry items, which were collected. But then it was the campers themselves who brought those to places that were desperately in need of those. One of the sessions went to a home for elderly, this was outside of Atlanta, I believe. They did a program, and then they visited one-on-one with the individuals. So that it was a matter of, let's teach Tikkun Olam, let's teach Mitzvot, and then let's put it into action. And I would say that's still very much a part of what's happening at Coleman. It was also part, as you said, Sefti, a part of our youth group, even more so, the Camp Jenny program that happens at Camp Coleman to this day, which brings inner-city Atlanta kids, those who have done a great job at school that year, get to go Memorial Day weekend to Coleman for a weekend. And get away from their environment. The counselors are all the high school leaders from throughout the region. And it's great. And it's also, for me, part of what makes a Coleman, part of what makes for the Ramah camps as well, there is a difference between a camp for Jews and Jewish camps. And the URJ camps are an extension of what we're teaching in our congregations. And the Ramah camps are an extension of what's going on in conservative congregations. Which is why I'm excited to be a part of it. And then our kids come back into our religious schools, into our synagogues, and bring those values that they've learned, as well as the songs and the prayers that they've learned. We try to make our services sometimes more camp-like because of the wonderful experiences they've had at our camps. And I think it's wonderful.
I want to ask a question, not to pop any bubbles, but does anyone have any memories of something that was really not fun or possibly frightening, or is there any negative memory? I know Lisa, you talked about your first year of homesickness and Marcy's.
My daughter's got an experience that was frightening at Blue Star.
Well, I'm Stephanie McLaurin, and I'm Maxine's daughter. And last night we were at my aunt's house and discussing some of the questions that might be asked, and remarked, it was kind of funny almost, that one of the questions was something frightening that happened to you, because I don't think of anything frightening when I think about being at Blue Star. I was lucky enough to go for 5 summers, and it was like 97 to 2001, and that is the time that Eric Robert Rudolph was on the run after the Atlanta bombing and the abortion clinics, and was rumored to be hiding out in the mountains. So we went on our overnight, and that was our campfire story. And that was right now, he was going to come out of the woods and find the kids at Jewish summer camp. So that, I guess, that was a
right now. No. I got yelled at for trying to sneak pork rinds from Dollywood back on the
That was better than Rudolph the Monster was.
Very scary.
I'm not sure how much this extended into Blue Star, but I remember at Wakanda, it was incredibly competitive. You know, and I mean, and that was part of the values, and that was kind of part of that athleticism. If you were a kid that didn't fit into that ethos or into that mindset or in that program, there was no place for you. You know, so I mean, they had a mentality, they had a program in mind, and this was how it was going to be. But I remember there was very little room for. But you know, it kind of kicked everybody in the butt. Mm-hmm. You know, and made you do things that were frightening. Sometimes maybe, you know, now I see the real value in that when I look at the college kids in my classroom. So, I mean, I think pushing kids to do things that were a little, involve some fear or some pushing them beyond boundaries that they're comfortable with is pretty powerful.
But a lot of that doesn't have to be competitive in nature. Right. I mean,
It was a very
I would say the camp that I went to as a kid would have called itself not competitive, but it had a lot of sport.
Yeah.
But it also had creative aspects and things like that. I think the idea of having a child get the opportunity to extend themselves and to fail upward, if you will, to make the attempt at something, not do it well, and then go back and do it again. Right. That's summer camp, any kind, any type, any variety, any good one anyway. And boxing is very, very strange. I saw boxing had to have gone out by 58 or 59. Yeah.
I think it was very much about where Ben Kessler was.
Yeah, but it sounds like a guy kind of mentality. Yeah. There was a camp I couldn't remember, the one they filmed Indian Summer at, he also was a boxing.
Yeah.
And that's how they used to settle the conflicts in camp, without putting it in the ring.
Right.
You know, that's a little odd.
Right.
For,
that's a little odd.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Sandra.
I noticed there's a counselor at a camp called Bel Air, and nothing was mentioned about that.
You know,
that
I don't know much Jewish. About Bel Air other than it was a camp that was mostly for Jewish kids. It was in someplace in Tennessee. And I know that it... I don't know, but it was a pretty successful camp for a while. Yeah. It was before I hit the age of 10 that they went out of business.
I was in college when I was a counselor.
Yeah.
You know, Roger, you mentioned successful as a camp director and owner. Have you seen a trajectory?
Yeah, Commissar.
Commissar, Tennessee?
No, that's the name of the people.
Oh, family.
They were from Nashville.
They were from Tennessee,
Their name was Commissar.
Yeah, I don't know what happened in Bel Air, but you were asking about the...
Well, it's a business, too, obviously, and, you know, there's a bottom line.
Yeah.
Has there been, like, a great run of years and then not such a great run of years? How does that go?
I think there's an ebb and flow private camps have to make their money the old-fashioned way. They have to earn it. So you can't give private camps money. There's no tax deduction. So if they're unsuccessful for a long enough time, they cease to be camps at all. But I would say that the 60s were like the golden era. It was easy. You could basically, there were so many kids out there. They were building schools, whatever. You know, the baby boom was good for camps and for starting camps. When the baby boom ran out, which was around 69-70, the 70s were very difficult for a lot of reasons. One was that parents didn't particularly care for the idea that that nobody followed any rules, and that you could have a counselor teaching a kid how to roll a joint, and then what to do with it afterwards, and that it made the concept of an overnight much more intriguing than it
probably was intended to be. I would say 70, 72 to 80 were rough for a lot of camps. And then the pendulum sort of swung back a little bit. One of the nice things about being associated with a movement camp like one of the reform camps is that they have charters that indicate what they will consider acceptable and not acceptable. They are way ahead of they were way ahead of the curve in terms of same-sex issues, and I think it cost them to some extent. But yeah, and then I guess the 80s and 90s were really pretty decent economically. I don't think a whole lot of camps got founded after that initial post-war rush, maybe up through about 1958. And, you know, the media does a horrendous job of this as well as many other things, but, you know, they'll latch onto an idea like specialty camps put regular traditional camps out of business. That's really not true as far as I can tell and from what I know. I think that like anything, if you're good enough at it, your clientele keeps coming.
The camp I mentioned was run by a woman.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot her first name.
But I don't know why they went out of business. I mean, I don't know whether they ran out of kids. It would be hard to believe that you could run out of kids in 55 or 56 because there were so many of them.
You know, just listening to everybody, though, you know, what's really hit me this time is, you know, I think when Dale and I brought up this idea before, just talking about Jewish camping in the South, it's like, well, this is really interesting experience, but now it's so clear to me how central it is to the Southern Jewish experience. It's hugely impactful on what Southern Jewish life has been about, because like for people, even though I didn't go to that kind of a Jewish camp when I was a little girl, if I had, it would have deeply shaped my Jewish life, and as it has thousands of Southern Jews in really, really powerful ways, because they did not have access to that experience or to that knowledge or to that infrastructure within their own communities. Either they didn't have the synagogue or they didn't have the other kind of infrastructure, religious infrastructure, or the people or the population. You know, so it was an incredible curriculum, first of all. I mean, it's clear that what the Popkins, what everybody else were creating at these camps as far as educational program was amazing. You know, it was just incredibly creative. It was deeply connected to so many levels of knowledge about childhood education, about psychiatry, about religious life, about the environment, about ecology, about connecting to current issues in the United States, what was happening. They were deeply cognizant of that. And that was a very powerful experience for the children that were privileged and able, and staff who were able to participate in that experience. The other thing that's so clear to me listening to people too is that it was not just about, you know, this that it galvanized your Judaism. I thought, Lisa, when you said that was so powerful. But you also think about what it created as far as progressive Southerners, those kids that came out of these camps and that had this experience as to inform their lives. As I mean, hearing Roger speak about justice and righteousness, and what did it mean to be a righteous person? There could be a more powerful place than the American South to hear these kinds of concepts. So, I think it's really going to be important when somebody writes a dissertation someday about the impact upon camping in the American South on Jewish camping. It's really it's a critical part of Southern Jewish experience and life, and maybe we'll develop a course on this.
I'd like to think that it still is
a
critical need, whether it's for social justice, right, religion, or a movement such as Zionism, or whether it's, you know, a commercial venture in the sense that, you know, that's a private camp versus a movement camp. But I think we all face the same challenges of funding. Because you may get a write-off, that doesn't automatically guarantee that, you know, the people are going to step up to the plate. And to be able to keep tuitions in a place where they're affordable. Now, I know many of the camps have scholarship programs that are very dependent on grants and donations from either alumni or parents or whatever. But nowadays, we do see all the challenges of not just other camps, but and specialty camps, but there's no end to programs that kids can go to that compete with a Jewish summer camp, but cannot provide the same type of experience and life skills and commitment that going to a summer camp can. And so I think it's important for all of us, in the various communities to kind of preach that message of, the importance of summer camp and the importance of scholarship and making camp an affordable type of situation where kids can participate.
I happen to be on the board of the Foundation for Jewish Camp, which is the supporting organization for the 150 non-private Jewish camps. The conservative movement, the reform movement, there are lots of independent camps that are Jewish camps, and they have a program called One Happy Camper. I don't know if you know what it is, but they basically will give up to $1,500 to every child who is knocked into a Jewish camp to be able to attend a Jewish camp. With the help of Brandeis University, they've done a lot of research that makes the philanthropic efforts of camps to raise money a lot easier, because they've really been able to prove in more than an anecdotal way like we are today, they've been able to prove that, if you want to raise a Jewish person as an adult, send them to a Jewish camp. While that makes common sense to all of us, and certainly you've had a camp experience, you know it's true, but they've been able to prove it on a multitude of different levels, and everybody from Marcus Foundation to Jim Joseph, they've all been pouring money at Grinspoon into agency camps. Their lack of outreach to previously Jewish values camps that aren't denominated by a denomination is not great. But they may eventually get around to trying to get some of the camps that used to have Jewish programs and have all Jewish kids, but can't do it anymore, don't know how. They haven't made an effort in that direction, but they might. But in what you're saying is absolutely true. I mean, especially when you get something like the Pew Foundation research that came out a couple of weeks ago, that just scares the pants off of anybody who thinks that that Jewish continuity is at risk.
It's like the second most important factor on Jewish identity.
Well, it's interesting. We did this thing.
Can you say that a little bit about the Pew?
Well, what the Pew research said is, the degree to which they are articulating in the standard ways that people choose to identify themselves as Jewish are not going as well as historically they would be. We did this thing when our camp turned 50 to specifically address whether we were meeting our mission. Granted, we don't really have a mission because we're not a mission-driven camp, but we defined our own mission, and then we had a demographer from the University of Miami do this. And when you get into the parts about, the degree to which going to, in this case, Blue Star, could have been Ramah, Coleman, any of it, help you maintain and become a Jewish person by choice, we were up in the, second. I mean, other than really family and what happens in the family, camp is it. And I always get a kick when I go to these board meetings. I get a kick out of the fact that the executive director of the Foundation for Jewish Camp is a Blue Star alum, and the current chairman of their board is a Blue Star alum. And technically, we're not a Jewish camp as far as they're concerned, because we're a privately owned Jewish camp.
And to build on that, just to put it in perspective today, as a parent of campers, Jewish camp basically costs $1,000 a week for a summer. It's a lot of money. So for those who have had positive Jewish camping experiences, the best thing to do is share that with this next generation of campers by donating. I know many congregations have funds to help send kids to camp. We helped send 12 kids to camp, most of whom would not have been able to go to camp without assistance from the congregation. You can also donate directly to the camps, who are trying to do more and more with scholarship funds. Absolutely, the research has shown that the non-formal Jewish education programs, camping and going to Israel, have been the two most effective means of keeping kids Jewish and enabling them to be Jewish adults. There is all kinds of competition. I'm proud to say there are new Jewish camps that are coming up in the Reform movement. The first Jewish sports camp, Six Points Sports Academy, is now in Greensboro at the American Hebrew Academy. This year, the first Jewish science and technology camp is opening up in Boston, where kids will work on robotics and video game programming. Again, this is those are kids who are coming to our camps. And so now the idea is, let's give them a Jewish option so that they can study robotics, so that they can drill baseball and basketball, again, in a Jewish environment. I think it's wonderful.
Eric.
Eric and then Jerry.
My question for you, Roger, is, do you think that we've all agreed about what the goal is, but do you think the needle can be moved? I mean, I'm obviously all in favor of what the Foundation for Camping is doing, but is there sort of a glass ceiling we're going to keep bumping up against, or is there this many kids are going to camp, there's this many kids who aren't, and we can really move the needle? Do you think it's possible to do?
I think that it's really a pretty simple equation. The more Jewish kids you send to Jewish camp, the more Jewish adults you get. I think it's easier when you provide scholarship help than when you don't. Personally, and it's a case that I have not successfully made with the Foundation for Jewish Camp, but I believe that where they're missing the boat completely is that you have 400 other camps that are basically 80 to 95% Jewish population, and they do nothing with their Jewish identities, either from a cultural or a human justice kind of level, or because they don't know how, and that their generation of current ownership has been so far removed from being able to even do something as minimal as a Shabbat across America, they couldn't do it. But the Foundation for Jewish Camp doesn't reach out to them. Those are the lost souls. Those are the Pew Foundation kids that won't wind up being Jewish adults. I don't think people choose to go to Ramad Daron or Coleman or even a Blue Star because they come from families where Jewish identity is not important. They aren't going to those camps that are movement camps because it's $1,500 cheaper than going to a camp in Maine. They're going because the family already has that as a core belief, builds on that, and then that makes the circle come to be a complete circle. I think that the failure is with technically the camps that really are like Blue Star but don't know how to do what Blue Star does. Or they believe that they'll be perceived as too Jewish, in quotes. God knows what that means, but too Jewish has an element of a lack of prestige involved in it. That's where the battle is really being lost to me. It's not being lost on the movement camps. The movement camps are doing their thing, and they're doing it right. And they're hitting an audience that may not have been going to camp anywhere. But no, I think the needle moved. I think it's going to keep moving. And I think as long as people are out there, like the Pew people, fear-mongering that idea that, you know, there's going to be no Jewish people in another 20 years because half our kids intermarry, the other half get divorced, and, you know, there's no hope for our people. It's worse than Hitler, you know. I don't think that's the problem. But I have a lot of opinions, obviously. Most of them are...
And there's training lists these days, meaning I think the desire really is there.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that the proof is in the pudding. You get Jewish people out of Jewish camps. You know, your children become... I know, but, you know, it's...
Jared.
Jared. It's an easy Jared Messerman. I'm related to one of the panelists. And I've been very impressed by everything. I mean, really, this is a very touching kind of discussion. Now, I never went to camp, and I'm from the north.
Ooh.
So maybe that's why I can't
comment.
But considering the cost, I would assume that most of the people, all of you, came from upper class families or families with parents deeply committed to commitment of a substantial expenditure for the purpose of sending you. And I don't know to what extent your experiences reflect your upper classiness or your Jewishness. And I'm serious about that because you talk about $1,000 a week, that is a tough thing for most families. So you're going to restrict who's going to be there. And do you think that's so? And what can be done if you don't have the resources to experience the same kind of thing that you experienced?
Well, what Eric was talking about and what I was saying about the one happy camper thing, the one happy camper thing makes that $4,000 month down to $2,500. If the individual camp itself has scholarship money available to knock another $1,000 off of that, it's almost as cheap to send the kid to camp as it is to keep the kid at home and they're out of your hair. You know, camp has always been the place where children go for their parents' vacation. Regardless, Jewish, not Jewish, whatever. When they're being taken care of safely, someplace where you don't have to think about it, you know, if you still like your spouse, you're on a honeymoon. You know, it's like pretty easy to get behind that. I think there's money available for people who, and the benefit of going to a movement camp that has scholarship kids is that you're not entirely going to camp with rich kids from Boca Raton. You know, you're going to camp with all elements of the Jewish picture. And I don't think that you have to have money to go to camp. If you want to go to camp, there's a way for you to go to camp.
So let's
even a for-profit camp like Blue Star has a couple $100,000 a year that we give away. It's not money people give us, it's money of our own, but we recognize that there's a value in having non-rich kids going to camp with kids who may be perceived as rich kids.
Let Lisa say a word and then we'll come back around.
I'd like to comment too about financing for camp, because as a camper, I know my parents worked very hard in their own business and they absolutely made it a priority. As a parent, we made it a priority to pay for camps for our kids, and we also contribute to camperships at the camps that they've attended. On the flip side of that, many of you that I've talked to today are grandparents, and I can think of no better Hanukkah gift than to give your kids Jewish camp for the summer. Think about it. It's a great gift. It's a great way to debulk your estate through the years, just like paying for their private school tuition is. And I just think that those are some options that people can be educated about to send their grandkids to camp.
That's exactly what you said.
Yeah, let me speak on that just a second. We have two new babies in our family and have already started Blue Star funds with them. It makes it easy to know what to give them for various occasions, and we'll get the money together in time.
I think what's important about what you're saying, Jerry, is that you're reflecting historically what the Southern Jewish experience was, and largely the kinds of families who could afford that experience for their kids. I mean, it really speaks of, not everybody could, but it does speak powerfully about who Jewish Southerners were in that era and who the founders were.
Tell us who you are.
If you have
your name.
Oh, I'm Will Friedman.
Will Friedman.
I was raised in Columbia, and but I'd like to say that if a Jewish parent has values and wish their children to have a Jewish experience, they would prioritize, no matter what their income would be, to send them to a Jewish camp with that is like a specialty camp, if I'm saying that correctly. Where there's a will, there's a way. And even a poor person, if they really believe in carrying on our Jewish tradition, wants their child to experience a Jewish tradition, they will find a way with their family or with somebody, you know, or they'll prioritize their money to make sure that this experience is there for their child.
Sandra Lee.
Because one other way that kids who maybe couldn't afford to go to camp end up getting that experience, and that's by applying for jobs as counselors. I know lots of people who their camping experience was getting a summer job as a counselor, and it impacted their life, you know, tremendously. So that's just another avenue that...
One more. Moss. People are voting with their feet here.
Yeah.
Moss.
Just a very brief comment, and I guess it's in the spirit of the Jewish notion that we can have disagreement. I guess I fundamentally disagree with what you said, and I want to say why. With the gentleman here about if you want to. I grew up in a family that didn't have money, and I did not go to camp. And all my friends went to camp. And it wasn't because my parents didn't care about Judaism, quite the contrary. They spent an enormous amount of time and energy. And I think the issue Jerry raised is an important issue, and I think a lot of times, in my experience, I've spent a good bit of my life involved in the Jewish community trying to make sure that we dealt across the classes, because there's that typical view that Jews aren't poor, Jews don't have the problems, Jews don't have whatever else it is, and it's not true. On the other hand, when I got married and had children, one of my priorities was to try and send kids to camp. I was able to go, and I mentioned that earlier, to the LTI kind of thing, the 1 week, and then I don't know what it's like in other places, but those things were made available to those of us, to anybody, but there was no discrimination based on your class. If you were in that group of people selected, the community found money for you. And I think that the value of it, but it's very important for us to understand the incredible role it had, but also to always be thinking about how we elicit others to be able to do it.
I agree with you 100%, and that's what I was talking about.
Well, one of the things that
community has to be involved too, but
one of the things that most people would assume, well, no, I don't know if it's true or not. But I always assumed that the amount of time that you went to camp, there was a relationship between that and how powerful it was in a person's life. But in my working with the American Camp Association, their research proves the opposite. The way their bumper sticker is, dose doesn't matter. So in a sense, 1 week that you're talking about could be as potent as 8 weeks at a Blue Star or a Ramah. Which then makes you have to ask the question of the people that are doing specialty camps with one half of camper money. Maybe it would be a lot smarter to do 1 week camps for kids, making it possible for them to go to a regular traditional Jewish camp and not do the whistles and bells crap. Instead, do, you know.
What do you mean by whistles and bells?
There's something sexy about running a camp for Jewish kids to learn how to play the stock market. You know, I mean, it sounds it sounds
Jewish.
Yeah,
or whatever.
So, or whatever. Okay, but it's yeah, that's something like
that. Okay, we're gonna let Jerry have the last word. Yes. The last word.
Candy, I really respect you because I didn't know that you came from the North and went there. I agree with everything you said about the value that you brought down to the South, which relates me to my Jewish camping experience in Massachusetts. What alerts you today is as though the needs of Northern Jewish children are quite different than the needs of South Carolinians or North Carolinians. But the goals of the camp were identical.
and most important, what we didn't even talk about today, is the growth that children get from going to camp. You just have to send your child to camp and see them when they come home 4 to 8 weeks later, how much they've grown, and grown with the values that we want to put in. And if you think they grow in camp, it's when they become counselors that you really see it. Because then they have to take the values that they learned in all their days camping and turn it around and instill it on their campers. It's a great process. Sitting here today, I've been wondering, what would my life be in Charleston today without the Southern Jewish camp? I think it would be dramatically different.
How many people here went to Jewish camp? Everybody. Not everybody. How many people didn't? Let's put it that way. How many people didn't?
You paid your dues in the Southern Jewish camp.
So I want to thank all of our panelists. I want to thank our panelists. You all did a wonderful job. Our reception is at 5:30 at Spigner House. You have a little bit of a break to go and relax. And we'll see you. And Ted will give... I don't know if you all realize this, but today is the 75th anniversary of the Kristallnacht.
I agree.
And we will recognize that tonight. Ted Rosengarten has prepared it. So I'll see you at 5:30. That was wonderful.
Thank you for having us.
My daughter's